Welcome to a special edition of the Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're discussing the top 10 ways to save Bold and the Beautiful. It's going to be an interesting discussion. We hope you enjoy, so stay tuned. Well, Jamie, welcome.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, not a whole lot. Trying to get through an intro without making a mistake, and apparently that won't happen, so we have to retry and retry and retry, much to Mike's humor and chagrin. Welcome,
Mike. I get a little chagrined from it, too, so we'll give it all to Mike.
Oh, okay. Give him, I see how it is. Take a little bit of his credit. Well, today we're discussing the top 10 ways to save Bold and the Beautiful. We sort of identified some of the things, and it won't apply to every soap, but some of the things that we thought about, I mean, it comes down to things like writing and storyline, appropriate use of history, technology, stunt casting. That's something that I think Bold and Beautiful might be able to use really well. Pivotal returns, villains, vets. Revenue. How in the world do these shows make their revenue? Advertising and promotion, realism, and in Bold and the Beautiful's case, diversity. So there's a lot of different areas where this show could improve. Jamie, why don't you take a stab at one of these categories?
Okay, well, I'm going to say that the first thing that Bold and the Beautiful has to do is to refocus the show around Eric, Stephanie, Brooke, and Ridge. If the 20th anniversary a year ago didn't show anything or tell us anything about this show, is that is the heart and soul. You know, you throw in Thorne and Taylor and even Felicia. She hasn't been, the character's been there long, but Leslie Kay hasn't. But any soap that needs to rebuild, and basically, let's face it, all of them need to rebuild right now, they have to get back to their core. You have to get back to who we tune in for. Brooke Logan is the heroine of this show. Stephanie, you know, she's the protagonist. Brooke is the protagonist. Stephanie is her antagonist. Ridge is the hero. We need to get Taylor back as the heart and soul of the show. I've enjoyed them humanizing her and actually letting her fall from grace, but there has to be a yin and yang. You know, Taylor, there is no, you know, before Brooke was the slut of the valley, now, I mean, take your pick. They're all sluts from Los Angeles. There has to be some, you know, redefining of these people as they are, you know. I mean, it's just the show really doesn't have a lot of rhyme or reason. So writing-wise, they're going to have to refocus the show on the original Foresters and, you know, spin everything else off from there. They're going to have to bring in the younger generation, but they have a perfect younger generation already set up. Steffi and Phoebe could be the new, you know, they could be like Vicky and Marley or Adam and Stewart. Have the young lady that plays Steffi play both roles now that the actress who's playing Phoebe is leaving. Let's forget that the whole, you know, this whole that they were fraternal because they were identical, you know, and let's have them be, you know, archetypical good twin, bad twin, and put Brandon Beamer right in the middle of them. Let's give Leslie Kay's Felicia a good chunk of this show. I say pit her against Brooke and let's bring back the business. Let's bring back Forrester Creations. All these other shows are doing so great. The Devil Wears Prada, The Hills, Ugly Betty with the fashion and glamour industry. And this show could do that so perfectly. Why aren't they going to Fashion Week? Why aren't we hearing more about the lines and, you know, them branching into, you know, trying to deal with celebrities or anything? I mean, it's just become a big smorgasbord of who can Jack Wagner screw this week. And that's not interesting.
You've made so many points right there. I'm going to try and like work through these as we go through the discussion. You've mentioned focusing on the core. But one of the somewhat unique problems that Bold and the Beautiful has at the moment, at least perception-wise among fans, everybody knows that Susan Flannery is coming up on retirement. And in the comments, many of you made great comments on our post on Daytime Confidential. And one of the reoccurring themes that came through on people's comment was that the question as to whether what's happening to Stephanie and how long will she be around is becoming an issue for fans, because it seems like without classic Stephanie or core Stephanie, the show doesn't seem to know what they want to do for themselves. And Cashin on the blog wrote, is part of their solution for helping to solve Bullnabeal. They said, create a company for the Logans to compete, or for the Logans to compete against the Foresters. The two families need to have a tangible conflict other than who is marrying and sleeping and who they are sleeping or marrying. Then, as a follow-up, piggybacking on that, they need to find an heir apparent for Stephanie. Since Susan Flannery's leaving in a few years, they need to have someone to take her place. And many people, at least in the comments that we've been getting on here, have suggested that Leslie Kay's Felicia would just be that person because she can take over and do the kind of stuff that Stephanie once did. So for a show like Bold and the Beautiful that's facing the loss of a major actor and a cornerstone of the show, what does Bold and the Beautiful do if they don't start trying to phase someone in, say, like a Felicia? Mike, I think you've been watching Bold and the Beautiful many years longer than I have. What's your take on the core and where things stand with Stephanie specifically?
Well, I feel that, like you, that Stephanie needs a heir apparent, and Felicia would be the most obvious choice. Since she has been fighting with her father, I think that she would be the one to have a reason to be more antagonistic toward people. I'm not really sure that she would go after Brooke per se, because Brooke is older and been through the family. Her nemesis may be Donna, although I'm not really thrilled with the Donna-Eric pairing. I would also like to see a little bit more with the downfall of Forrester. I think Forrester should be the focus of the show. It seems to be that the Logan family has taken its place above the Forresters, and I don't think it should be that way. But I would like to see a power struggle in the company. Thorne is always underrated. Felicia is underrated. Eric is, I would say, for a guy his age and means he's at retirement. So I would like to see his kids fight for control of Forrester. And while that's going on, I would like to see Spectra kind of put a battle between the two, and maybe Jackie, who owns that company, and Nick. I could give or take Nick, but let's say the two of them went into business together. I kind of would like to see a little bit more of the focus of the show be in fashion. Jamie mentioned diversity. For a city of Los Angeles' size and makeup, there is no diversity. The only diversity that we've seen is Marcus. I think that there needs to be a lot more integration of cast members or new people that might be able to kind of rejuvenate the rivalry between Forrester and Spectra and just kind of get a more diverse group of people, whether it be, you know, black, Hispanic, gay, straight, white, you know, the whole gamut. There's a lot of possibilities. There's a lot of possibilities, and you've got LA as your back. You got LA as your backdrop.
I want to ask a question because both of you have mentioned it. Both of you have mentioned Forrester, and in many respects, Forrester has taken a second or third seat to the Logan family's dynamic. And one of the things that kept popping up in the comments from the listeners and the readers was that, A, they wanted the fight for Forrester to return, or B, they wanted an outside entity coming after them. Some people suggested the fact that Spectra needed to be reawakened by having Jackie and Clark in charge of it and coming after Forrester. Someone suggested that since Forrester is high fashion, that the whole fact of the whole basis of this story is that the Forresters are highfalutin, snooty people, that there has to be someone who's a little bit trashy to take them on or to make them feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. Some have suggested that Owen should end up being Clark's son, which could create a very interesting dynamic if that were to happen. Some have even went so far as to suggest that Bold and the Beautiful needs an actual third family and or third company to take and try and revitalize it, because there is no other real equivalent fashion rivalry. I am a sucker for corporate storylines, so my question becomes is, if the corporate storylines are something that the fans are craving and that they're really, really wanting, how do they start rebuilding corporate rivalries, either internally or externally, when the whole basis of the show, and we've discussed this at some length in previous episodes, is that Eric owns the whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel, and there's nothing anybody else can do.
Eric makes a decision to take Forrester public. It causes comfort. I'm borrowing from Young and the Restless here, because this brought tons of great story to Y&R, and it could do the same for B&B, and B&B has used Y&R's template several times. Let Eric take the company public. You bring in a dynamic, guy in his 40s to be a dashing corporate raider who takes control of Forrester, that puts all the women in town on notice, puts Ridge on notice that he's not the hottest cock in the walk anymore. You bring on, a Ted King or someone as this corporate raider who assumes control of Forrester, and then you have Felicia, Brooke, and all of the other women. Well, not all of the other women, because some of these women need to go. But, there's so many ways. I don't think Spectra will always be near and dear to my heart, but Spectra was never competition for Forrester. They were always seen as like the Kmart to Forrester's, Macy's.
Did you create the Jabot versus Newman Cosmetics? I guess
who
that
even
would be
says there has to be two rival houses? I mean, why not just have the internal dynamic? Eric has two families by two women. There's conflict right there. The first generation Forresters versus the second generation Forresters. You bring back Ridge's son as an heir apparent and pit him against Rick, who he would hate for banging his mom and sister. And you play that rivalry. You've got Jack and Victor Jr. I'm just piggybacking again. You create a rivalry between Eric's son and his grandson for control of the company, right there in Forrester. You back burner and or write off a good chunk of the Logans. There's no need for Beth Logan. There's no need for their father. That storyline was B&B's origin story, but the Logans are not connecting with the audience because these are all recasts except for Brooke, and we have no investment or care for any of them, really. I mean, let's just be honest. They were not a good replacement for the Spectras, who we had grown to love over the years, but the Spectras were never even really a rival. I mean, there was always that campy rivalry, but they were always doing Forrester knockoffs and things like that.
Okay.
So, I mean,
then I want to ask a question, pose this to Mike. I don't know if you read it, but Jamie wrote a really great post about what he would do in terms of producing spinoffs on the blog. In that, right, he suggested that Felicia should have her own show, which I just wish that she would just take over Bold and the Beautiful if it was okay. But if you were going to take and start creating internal rivalries, or if you were going to take and bring in an outside corporate raider by taking the company public, who would you want to see still around after all of the chips fell?
I guess
what do you can? I guess let me rephrase that. What do you consider to be the core of a Bold and the Beautiful looking into the future?
Well,
without
the core is always going to be the Forrester family, and if you put the kids against each other, if you put Felicia and Thorne and Ridge against each other, Ridge, I don't know. I just wish it would make Eric a little bit stronger. There was a scene a couple weeks ago where Ridge said that Donna had the lost son. Well, Ridge was the lost son. And, as much as Eric loved him, he's still not a true Forrester. So I would like to see Eric kind of buck up a little bit and pit his children against each other. I think Thorne is an underused guy. He had gone to Spectre for a while to sow his oats and see what he could do. And he had some success. I also think that with Spectra, you might not get the same kind of thing because Jackie's running the company. But when the dust settles, I think Felicia and Thorne and Ridge are going to be your key characters. I don't think Eric and Stephanie are really going to be a part of it, because they do get older and there comes a time when the kids have to take over.
Mm.
And Felicia, those three could kind of battle it out over time. It doesn't have to be something that's going to be resolved and say, well, person A is going to get it. You could have them arc for years.
I think the problem,
I
want
to see Eric and Stephanie pulling puppet strings. I disagree with them having to be phased out, because Jane Wyman ran Falcon Crest
phased
into
out
her
of
80s.
Their company. I think it would be interesting to watch them fight for the company, though.
Right.
And the other problem that you have, though, is that the Forrester family is just so freaking huge for a really small pie, in essence. I mean, you have all of Eric's children with Brooke. You have the children with Stephanie. And then you have all the grandchildren. The entire family is going to start cannibalizing itself in terms of what's available. I don't think Mike meant necessarily phasing out in terms of getting rid of, but when you know that Stephanie is no longer going to – or is going to be taking a reduced –
Well, we know that she's talking about it, and that's the one thing I want to bring up. They cannot write this show like it's a given that Susan Flannery is going to retire. Whether she's going to retire in 2 years or not – worry about that in 2 years. Write Stephanie as she is known now. When Beverly McKenzie left Guiding Light, no one knew up until the last minute. So Alex went out as Alex. Stop writing this character like she's already in Sunny Acres. Write her as she is and as she is supposed to be now, and stop worrying about her retirement.
Yeah,
Ron Moss
I think,
has been saying for years that he is thinking about leaving the role of Ridge one day, too. You can't write your show on tomorrow. Write it for today.
Right. I agree with you, because watching Stephanie in the dark in the bed saying she was depressed, not Stephanie. Stephanie would take her depression or whatever, turn it into anger, and kick ass. This Stephanie is not working for me. So
they backed
and it's not working
a
for a lot of people. It's not.
Yeah.
If you want to rebuild your strengths and focus on what's going on, Stephanie obviously could crush Donna like, you know, a newspaper to a fly. But
hell, she could just shoot her.
Right.
What
but the
should
whole
have
thing
happened?
Is
Storm shouldn't have died. Donna should have died at the result of something Stephanie did, which would have reawakened the Brooke-Stephanie rivalry. And that's what I was talking about with Catherine Kelly Lang and Leslie Kay. They haven't ever really had a rivalry, but those are two strong actresses that
yes.
could really be a hot rivalry, whereas I don't see that with any of them against Jennifer Garris, because Jennifer Garris is more of a campy side character, and they've handed her the
character.
Center of the show. Yeah, I mean, that's her strength. Even her as an actress, that's what she was on Young and the Restless. She's not meant to carry a soap. She's meant to be that campy bombshell type. I mean,
well,
I don't have to clarify that. I mean, that's just my opinion. She's not meant to.
No, you're right. I agree with you.
So we've sort of discussed writing. We've sort of discussed appropriate use of history, because it doesn't seem like it's using them really. Let's talk about stunt casting and stunts in general. When we were talking about it on All My Children has become notorious for stunts. I mean, you have the Mario Van Peebles, which is a stunt casting in many respects. You have the pole dancing, which is totally a stunt. Bold and the Beautiful doesn't necessarily have stunts, and in fact, they've almost gotten to the point where they have gone so
Let's clarify. Yes, they do. If you're saying Mario Van Peebles is just an older actor who's joined the show. Stunt casting is Donald Trump coming on Days of Our Lives or stuff like that.
No,
that's
but
not really.
But by stunt casting, most people would assume, or most people, at least when we were we've discussed in All My Children, is that they picked a named actor to be able to get a headline so that they could have
B&B
it
does
on the
that
show
all the time.
Patrick I know,
Duffy.
But what I was meaning for Bold and the Beautiful is that you don't necessarily have the same context where it's day in, day out, everything is a stunt. On Bold and the Beautiful, it seems where they take and – I'm losing my train of thought here because I had it. When it comes to stunts, Bold and the Beautiful – I mean, they used to – fashion used to be the stunt in terms of – what was going on the catwalk usually reflected something that might be going on the show, but it was sort of their quote-unquote stunt. Someone pointed out in one of the posts that I was reading on the blog on commenting on this is that Bold and the Beautiful went from having four fashion shows a year to two. And fashion is becoming an element in the show that pretty much no longer existed. If Bold and the Beautiful wanted to, they could take and have stunt casting all the time by bringing in big name people like Project Runway type stars or whatever, or other more minor celebrities to sit in the front row of their catwalks when they're taking and having these fashion shows. And they could very easily and quickly get in and have stunt casting to be able to pull viewers in by bringing in celebrity names four times a year and make it really easy to pull in new viewers. So
stunt casting never works.
It doesn't work, but it gets you a headline and it gets you a mention on Entertainment Tonight or whatever the case may be. It just helps you with your publicity, shall we say. And let's face it, any soap that can get mainstream publicity wants it if they can get it. I guess my question would be, to me, it would make sense to try and do that in a fashion industry where you could probably get people to show up and
sit. I'd rather them cast, you know, recurring people as stylists and mimic the real fashion industry and see stylists and models and people that recur in and out that are organic and realistic than stunt casting. Stunt casting never works on any soap, and if that's the formula to fix a soap, you know, you're dead in the water before you start.
I'm not saying it's necessarily to fix it. What I'm saying is that potentially stunt casting in terms of allowing you to have that name would be something to just give it a little bit of burst of energy. It wouldn't be to
and
fix
what
is it.
That
it would
done
just be
for any, I know, but what has that really done for any of the other soaps? Nothing.
But
the
none of the others
on all the soaps that do that. Oh, yeah, plenty of them do. Days had Donald Trump come on. It did nothing. They had Jillian from The Biggest Loser. That nobody tunes in for that crap. That's just them trying to pimp their other agendas and projects. It doesn't help the soap. The musical guests help the soap a little bit, but I haven't seen any ratings bumps from bringing on. Now, yeah, when there were people that were genuinely fans, like Rosie O'Donnell, because she was a fan of All My Children and talked about it ad nauseum on her show. And when she came on as Adam's maid, you know, people tuned in. And Carol Burnett, because she was a real fan of All My Children, and they gave her a fleshed-out storyline. But if they're just going to have random yahoos from other shows pop up, that's not going to do anything for the ratings or quality of this show.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, I kind of agree with that. I mean, the last week they've had on Young and the Restless, they've had Kathy Hilton and Jamie, the magazine person. They've been on a couple of times. Does that change the essence of the Russell style story? No. Most people don't like it. So I don't know that
stunt casting actually makes
a huge difference.
I still maintain that Bold and the Beautiful, as opposed to other soaps being in the world of fashion, could do it, and to the point where it would be much more seamless and much more flawless and make much more sense than any other soap in daytime, and they could use it for a good headline.
It's possible you took one of the fashion shows, if you've established a character that is a PR person, that maybe when they're walking the runway, that, you know, their Bold and Beautiful's PR person is sitting alongside someone who's actually a real PR person, that it might be realistic that those two people would be sitting next to each other. That might be a more realistic approach, but it doesn't really make people tune into the Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah, headlines are great. Passion's got more headlines than any soap probably in the last decade. It's over. You know, I mean, it was covered in everything. Entertainment Weekly, more, you know. Headlines is not going to save the soaps. I mean, it's not about – they already do that. And I'm actually glad that Bold and the Beautiful is one of the soaps that doesn't bring out Little Richards and people like that for no reason or rhyme when they have other things going on that they need to fix. I mean, that's just pointless to me.
So in terms of the world of fashion then, how would you reinvigorate –
You're right. You're right. You pay attention to what's going on in the real fashion industry, and you write stories that are true to it and that mimic it.
Then that leads to my next question of how do you write what is true to the fashion industry without incorporating any of what's really going on in the fashion industry?
Luke, The Devil Wears Prada was about Vogue, but they didn't call it Vogue. They called it something else. You know, I mean, you write, you be creative. You don't think of it as a business model. You write a story. You have Brooke have a fashion model friend come back to town and say she wants to start her own agency and lure Brooke away from Forrester to start her own modeling agency and become independent from Ridge and show her trying to build an agency from the ground up. And I mean, you just write. You write. You don't sit and box yourself in with thinking you have to do it so technically and so specific to anything or some template. You just write. That's what writing is.
You've got your creative characters process. And you write for your characters.
Exactly. You write for the character. You don't sit and make a pie chart. I mean, that's what's wrong. They're doing it by basically they're letting people, you know, box them in with crap because it's all statistics and figures and what can spike, you know, this week. And, you know, it's that temporary spiking or buzz or whatever, if it doesn't hook people with good story when they tune in to see, you know, Posh Spice at a Forrester show, if the storylines suck, they're going to tune right back out.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, to me, if we're talking about improving the soap, it's in many respects improving the storyline goes hand in hand. I guess that just sort of seemed to me to be a basis of it. I want to ask something about villains because I haven't watched Bold and the Beautiful as long as you guys. And so for me, the villains on Bold and the Beautiful, I didn't watch during Sheila's reign of terror on Bold and the Beautiful. Who are the villains of Bold and the Beautiful today? And who are the villains that may or should come back? Mike?
Well, I don't really see a lot of villains on the show today. There seems to be Stephanie, who we've already mentioned, has been defanged. I would like to see Felicia, that's the most obvious choice to be a villain. My other choice for villain, which I've said before, is Bridget. If there's ever a girl on this show who has been knocked down, kicked around, and deserves to stand up for herself and kick ass, it's Bridget. So there are some potential people that have motivation to turn their personalities. So I would like to see Felicia. I would like to see Bridget. I would actually like to see a little bit more of the traditional conniving soap thing going on. But on this show right now, there isn't anybody. Jackie could actually do it if she's trying to bring down Forrester.
So
but
you
I don't see anybody doing it.
You wouldn't want to see the returns of possibly a Sheila or possibly an Amber Moore?
You can create those characters with what you have. I mean, you're talking about a 30-minute soap, so you can't really include a lot of people. I mean, you had mentioned that somebody had said that a introduction of another family, but that would really revolve around an hour-long show versus a 30-minute show. If you're going to work with what you have, I think that you have to use the characters that are there. Pam is a great villainess. However, she's too psycho. So I'd like to see her kind of be a little bit more normalized so that she's not necessarily just taking this one-way path out the door. I can totally understand why Pam is doing the thing that she's doing, but to have her be psychotic is not the vision that I would have for her. I would have her be a little bit underhanded. She could be like her sister. They could be a little bit, you know, more close in the way they think together. So I don't know. I think that there's potential to work with what's already there. What do you think, Jamie?
B&B's best villain that they have on cast right now, I mean, other than Stephanie, if they were going to bring that back. But I think the reason they're doing that is because they went so far with that rape that they had to take some time to distance that away from. But from Stephanie's persona. But Ridge would be a great villain. He's pompous. He's arrogant. He has spit on all of them over the years. Mm-hmm. And I think it would just be great to turn Ridge into this J.R. Ewing of the fashion industry that mows his way over his brothers and sisters and their various loved ones and just really play that up, because Ron Moss really does a good arrogant, you know, SOB.
And, yeah, he does.
I mean, they've got that right there. I think that they really have to soften some of Hunter Tylo's edges and, you know, that they've given her and kind of meld her back into being the Pam Ewing. You know, they need a heart and soul character. Felicia needs to be the badass, powerful sister who's trying to take down these interlopers, you know, but I don't think there has to be a cut and dry villain. I mean, and as far as bringing people back, the only, you know, I would like to see Thomas Forrester return because he's the Forrester grandchild male. That makes sense. They could age. Oh my God, they could have a perfect teenage. They set the seeds years ago with Taylor being responsible for Darla's death. Age Thorne's daughter and have her become, you know, hell bent to destroy Taylor. You know, get Thorne and Taylor back in a relationship because Taylor and Rick are not working. But as far as other returns, I mean, Deacon Sharp would be a no-brainer for me because he had that whole show popping, and it would give maybe Brooke and Bridget something to do or someone to do other than Nick.
It's interesting to hear your perspective because as someone who, like I said, haven't watched it as long, to me, that I haven't really seen any other villains other than Sheila's brief return or Amber. And I was caught the very tail end of Deacon when he was sleeping with Jackie. And so that, if that puts any context into how long I've been watching it, it's interesting to see. I hadn't thought of Ridge. That's a very good idea. Let's talk about vets for a moment. And the reason I want to mention this is because a lot of people in the comments that we were getting, or F. Smith mentioned that Bold and the Beautiful forgets a lot of Brooke's history. And once again, I haven't been watching it as long, so I'm not really the person to necessarily comment on this, but with Brooke being the integral character that she is, with Catherine Kelly Lang being the amazing actress that she is, what should Bold and the Beautiful do to use her specifically as one of its four core characters to revitalize the character, move her forward, and how do they draw on the history? F. Smith writes, if they would just use Brooke's history, it could make for some real family drama. For example, we need to be reminded that it was Brooke who first made the move on Eric Forrester, and that she's not as innocent as new viewers are led to believe now. We need to be reminded, through Felicia possibly, that Brooke had a baby by her daughter's husband. Most people would be pissed if their sister married their ex-husband. Most families would never forget that, and some would always bring it up at family gatherings. It really gets me hearing that Logan's dog, Stephanie, when Brooke is not some innocent victim. Stephanie used to have a friend, a black woman named Ruth, who would be perfect for her to reach out to now, as both women reach their golden years, and as Stephanie goes through this depression. Thorne used to date an immigrant from Mexico. I think her name was Claudia. She could come back legally with Thorne's now teen son or daughter.
No, that storyline bit.
Okay, well, that's your opinion. So what would you do for Brooke? What would you do for this character that's so integral to the show? And as, say, if Susan Flannery were to step more and more into the background, one would think that Brooke might have to – the character of Brooke might have to pick up. How would you revitalize your core veteran characters like Brooke?
First things first is – Brooke needs to have this flashing realization that she's wasted 25 years of her life on Ridge and kick him to the curb and go start her own business. Second thing is she needs to take Nick to task for screwing his way through her family. you know, and she can own up to her own history and what she did, and she can also bring up the fact that she was an insecure young woman. He is a man in his 50s who should know better, and he is toying with her daughter and her sister's lives, and she should put a stop to it. Brooke should be the one, because Brooke and Nick are the super couple in that equation. Yes, he and Katie have chemistry, but he and Bridget, there's nothing there. So Brooke needs to get back in his face and confronting him about what he's doing, because Nick has been given a total pass on this show as far as behavior. You know, they call Brooke a slut. They've even started like calling Taylor sort of a slut. But Nick is a slut, and someone should call him to the mat for that, for what he's done and playing with Bridget's heart like this. And it should be Brooke. She should be the one to take him to task for it. And moving forward, Brooke has two children that they can age. She has all of her history in business. They could bring in a new man as a business partner or a rival for her, you know, that'll, you know, tick Ridge off. I really think they need to put Ridge back with Taylor to rebuild that family unit and spin Brooke off into a whole new orbit, because it's, you know, I'm a firm believer in the super couple that lasts forever, but I mean, no, she has lost too much and given up too much of herself for Ridge, and I'd like to see them always be connected because of the Forrester family and that she has two Forrester children, but I'd like to see the two generations of the Forrester family pitted against each other with Brooke right slap dab in the middle.
Mike, how would you honor Brooke's history and bring her back to who she is moving into the future?
I actually think that he's on the right track. I don't see anything between Ridge and Brooke anymore. When I watch the two of them, they're hardly on together. And when they are, they're arguing about her family. So I don't understand, you know, the connection that they have anymore. There's no sweeping romance that keeps them together. I also think that for a while, Brooke was really poised to take over the head of the show, because she was interfering in Rick's involvement with Taylor, and she was interfering with Nick's involvement with Bridget, but she's completely backed off. And since Katie had her heart surgery, she has just kind of accepted everything. So she's lost a little bit of her focus. So I think Brooke, I've always thought Brooke, I just think the way that Catherine Kelly Lang pulls her off, there's nothing that she can do that is not going to come off as a good thing. I know that the writer had mentioned that people forget what Brooke has done. I don't forget that Brooke has done these things to her daughter. And I don't think that the show tries to write her off as somebody who tries to forget what she's done.
No, they bring it up.
Yeah, right. And I think she accepts the fact that she's flawed, but she just can't get past it. I'd really like to see her man free for a while and just really try to understand why she needs to have a man in her life and why she doesn't think she's strong enough.
You know, they do bring up Brooke's past, but I think what ticks people off, because I just giggle at it because it's just stupid, but when they have Brooke telling Taylor and Rick, "You're sick! This is sick!" It's like, you know, you want to pause the camera and go, and have someone look, like Ridge or anyone. It becomes a joke. I mean, who is Brooke to say what they're doing is sick? I mean, she stepped it up to the... Yeah, I mean, she has done the going through a family to a minimum. I mean, a maximum, I'm sorry. But, you know, and I love Brooke, but that really does water the character down when they have her, you know, going, "Oh, this is sick," when we know that she screwed her way through the entire Forrester and Maroney clan. And,
right.
You know, and she banged two of her daughter's husbands. I mean, it's like, come on, people. Don't have her being the one saying it's
sick.
And
she's been around long enough, and she has the smarts. I mean, she came up with the belief formula, so you know she's smart enough to do whatever she wants to do. And she has the means to do it.
And she needs her fire back. Remember the Brooke that when she was in a rivalry with Thorne over Macy, that she sends a bottle of champagne to Macy's table, a recovering alcoholic? That is awesome! That is the Brooke that would tell Stephanie that she was just too old and unattractive to keep Eric's attention. Where is that Brooke? You know, Brooke used to be a bitch, you know, and I think that's why fans liked her, because you love to hate her. But now... she's crying. Stephanie's crying. The viewers are crying.
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of any other veteran characters, any other way to revitalize some of them based on their history, do you think that Thorne, well, this is going to sound like an ignorant question, but do you think Thorne even has enough history on the show to be revitalized, or do you think he'll always be a second-run character?
Thorne has tons of history. He has a daughter. He's had several great love affairs. He and Brooke had a great love affair. That Mexican immigrant storyline, no, that was awful. And B&B, that's that kind of thinking that started that, too. They were specifically trying to target the Latin American telenovela market. It didn't happen organically, and it fell flat on its face. There's tons of stuff Thorne can do. I mean, let Thorne come out of the closet. Let him have this epiphany that he's gay. You know, have a relationship with a guy or something. Something. Daytime has just got to get with the program.
Do you like how Tim the intern got his job that we haven't seen for the last couple of weeks?
It was only last week that he appeared.
Well, I'm not.
For the first time.
I'm not bothered with Tim the intern. Well, wasn't that?
No, that's how he got his job, because of Thorne.
Maybe so.
Well, let's talk about diversity a moment. Mike sort of mentioned it at the beginning. It's something that we've talked about on this podcast before, and it's one of the things that, as many people have pointed out and many of the readers have pointed out in their posts, Bold and the Beautiful, by any stretch of the imagination, with its geographic location, the industry in which it's in, should have arguably the most diverse cast in daytime. And yet, if you look at it, there are only three black characters, if I'm not mistaken, the two detectives and now Marcus. You rarely, if ever, see any type of Hispanic character, and there are no gay characters, which is something that you see often in fashion. With the cast, if you're looking at the history of the show, if you're looking on moving forward and playing on the show's history, how do you take and diversify this cast? Mike?
Well, I guess you can, you know, try to – I mentioned earlier that trying to introduce another family would be difficult for a 30-minute format. But if you did it, you could try to introduce the cast, like for Marcus's family, like where does he come from, you know, who adopted him, who took care of him when he was growing up. You can start with – simple things like Tim, the character that you had given a performer
honorable mention.
It was an honorable mention. But, you know, just stuff like that. These girls walk in. Eric looks them over. They have a character that he interacts with all the time that is maybe an intern
Tim.
Or – I'm just using him as an example. I'm just – because he was there. But, you know, I'm just saying,
last time I checked, it's possible for a white man to be gay, Jamie.
Oh, well, no, I know, but I was – okay, that kind of diversity. I thought we were talking about – I don't think Tim's black.
Diversity does not necessarily have to mean skin color. It can cover a wide variety of things.
Right. I mean, he could be a gay character on the show. I mean – that's how you integrate. If you're going to focus on the fashion industry, you're going to have people coming and going that are of all different races and sexualities and all that kind of stuff. I mean,
and they have a black Forester. Really, I mean, why did they have to go out and create a black Logan when what's-her-face has a black son herself? The oldest girl, the one that comes home for weddings and funerals.
Krista.
She adopted a black kid.
And see, now that's something that I've forgotten, but that's how you do it. You kind of integrate what you have. I mean, if you're in the fashion business, you're focusing back on the Foresters and their business, and maybe
and
the
Jasmine.
Of their business or the fight of their business, you get models and you get
Bring back Jasmine. Remember the fashion?
Yes.
What happened to Jasmine? The Lark Voriz's character. She was on for a couple of years during one of their teen storylines, and then she became a fashion designer at Forrester. And I mean, bring her back, you know, with
if
a different
they
actress.
They don't have to be related to the Forresters and the Logans.
If anything,
there's no law that says that.
If anything, they could get Victoria Rowell there. She could be both a model.
They blocked that.
I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
No, but that would be awesome.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. She'd fit in perfectly, much more so than Ashley. Jamie, how would you diversify Bold and the Beautiful?
Well, like I just said, bring back Kristen's son. Kristen's son, you know, I believe he's HIV positive. They could tell that story. He'd probably be near a teenage now. He could mix in with the other Forrester kids, you know. I mean, there's just so much they could do. I mean, give one of those detectives a little sister that wants to be in the fashion industry. And after all these years of, you know, these murder cases with these Forresters, have the big brother be like, hell no, you're not getting mixed up with that crazy family. I mean, and then let her fall in love with, you know, Rick or Thomas. I mean, just it doesn't take much, and especially with it being a 30-minute show, we're not expecting this to become the Rainbow Coalition, but they could just sprinkle in a few, you know, one gay character, one black female character, and one Latino, you know, would be enough. You know, we're not expecting it to be the NAACP. We just want it to resemble Los Angeles, California.
Get rid of Pam at the secretary's desk and put a scheming, you know, non-white character there that wants to move her way up or his way up into the company because they've never had anything their whole life. I mean, that's a typical soap character.
Or Eric have had an affair with a black lady.
Okay, not for
ago.
Nothing, but Eric has had way too many children already.
Yeah, I agree with that one.
He could have had an affair. That would have been more interesting to me, have a teenage scheming, you know, or a young 20-something black woman come to town. Or, you know, maybe Eric was in Vietnam and he had an Asian daughter. I mean, some of these things are tried and true, but they could work. Or Ridge. Hell, Ridge might have went to Vietnam.
Okay, well,
somebody.
Somebody need to go to war with their fashion sense, I take it. Let's move on to a little bit more logistics of things. Revenue, advertising, and promotion. Not necessarily within Forrester, but of the show. How do you think is going to be the best way to take and make these shows more profitable going into the future? One of my only comments is that it seemed to me a little bit odd that Restless Style was on Young and the Restless, when it would seem to me that it would make much more sense if it was a division within Forrester. And that
a fashion magazine, a division in a fashion house?
I may have misspoke, but it would seem to me that a fashion magazine would make a lot more sense on a show about fashion as opposed to Young and the Restless. How do you see these shows moving into the future and trying to capitalize on the current assets that they have and generate more revenue so that they can afford to stay on air? Jamie?
B&B doesn't have that problem because it's overseas interests fill its coffers. So it's not like other soaps that are, you know, really having that issue. But, you know, I'm just a traditionalist. Tell a good story, people will come. I mean, they're sure you can do bells and whistles, and there's plenty of stuff they could do. They could do a webisodic series with the twins, having them do internships in New York City and really have them in New York City in the fashion industry and just air them online like, you know, they did with L.A. Diaries. There's plenty of stuff that they can do, but I feel like that if they focus too much on that, they're going to forget. And I mean they, meaning not just The Bold and the Beautiful, because The Bold and the Beautiful is a cut above a lot of daytime. I have to give them that. I know I'm sounding like the mad, angry man right now, but it's just I really care about this industry and I want to see it thrive. But I feel like it's story. It's story, 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 story. If you write a good story, you know, Martha Byrne said it best. When she started on As the World Turns, the police office was a table, a couple of chairs, and some walls. And, you know, Douglas Marlin made magic. You know, you can have all the smoke and whistles and mirror and magic, and if there's no story there, it's just that. It's smoke. It's all smoke when it's all said and done.
Mike?
I agree. I'm a very I kind of feel like I'm an old school soap guy. I think that people are pressed for time to watch 5 hours a week of soap opera. It's very difficult to try to tune into YouTube and read a book and all the other stuff that promotes the show. I think it's a great idea if you can get it, but if it's not going to – if it's going to take away from the actual show, which is what people tune in for, then it's not going to work. I also think that the only thing that The Bold and the Beautiful could do with the Restless Style type of thing is acknowledge the fact that they've been working on Restless Style and they might be able to cross-promote their shows. But other than that, this show is pretty well – ensconced itself as the follow-up to The Young and the Restless, which is why people like the corporate intrigue and the industry and the working aspect of the show. So,
well, see, this is something that's always sort of surprised me both about both Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful. We're so accustomed to seeing it on All My Children and the ABC soaps that you almost don't even realize it anymore. But here you have two shows where you have fragrances and perfumes and everything being manufactured, and one on Young and the Restless, and now they have Ashley creating fragrances for Forrester. Doesn't it seem a little bit odd that they're not selling some of these products in today's environment where shows are trying to capitalize on things by selling books and perfumes and those type of things?
Because they're not turning their soap into a swap meet. They're not turning it into a flea market. I understand that people feel that that helps generate revenue streams, but have we really seen any dollars and cents on any of that? I don't think...
You and I haven't, but they may have.
Right. But, well, I'm just saying this. ABC Daytime is the king of that, and Bold and the Beautiful and Young and the Restless still kick their butts in the ratings. And I don't think that that is the focus. I mean, I applaud Brian Franz, and I feel like he's doing whatever he can to make these soaps profitable. But I sincerely doubt when women watch Sex and the City, and they aspire to Givenchy and Prada and things like that. They don't want to go buy Erica Kane's perfume at Walmart. They don't. They don't want to buy it. They're not going to buy cheap soap, you know, inspired fragrances at your local Kmart. I mean, they're just not going to do it. You're going to find that mess in the 5 bin. When I go to buy Christmas gifts for the relatives that I didn't know were coming, and it's a surprise, I can rush to Walmart and get Charm for $2. You know, it's, I mean,
but,
seriously.
But if they know that, right, let's say X amount of women do buy that stuff. Does that translate back into viewers? I mean,
we don't
viewers
even know if
it, is really yeah. what they want. You don't know that somebody that's buying a Fusion perfume is actually somebody that faithfully watches All
My
Children.
And you have to go into a distribution deal with a department store. You know, that's spending all that time on that when you could just write a damn soap that's worth a damn.
And you talk to fan after fan after fan, and what do they tell you?
I don't want to smell like Ridge Forrester. I want a good story.
Give me a story. That's
right. You might smell wonderful.
And that's true. That's true.
That doesn't matter to me.
That's true, and I totally agree, but there's something to be said for the fact that As the World Turns was able to take, in terms of, at least in terms of books, have two New York Times bestsellers.
They all get on the bestseller list. They don't stay there, though.
They don't stay there. I mean, I read 100 pages of the first book. I don't even know if I bought the second book. I never got past 100 pages. I don't even know what happened, and it was never really integrated into the soap. How many people do you know bought the Guiding Light book about Jonathan and his
Nothing, but I know at least Jammy loved it.
Okay, and that's all well and good, and maybe Jammy loved it, but was it integrated into the show? Did you even notice it? No. You were supposed to read the book to know what happened.
Yeah.
But I don't need to read the book because I don't care what happened. Do you know what I mean? If you write the story, people will watch your show.
You know what? I've never read any of those books. I'm not going to lie. I am the biggest, most diehard soap fan you would ever meet. But I'm sorry. When I go in a bookstore, I'm looking for Jackie Collins. I'm not looking for Charmed, written by Kendall Hart Slater. I'm not looking for that. I'm just not looking for that. I'm looking for Kendall on All My Children to entertain me 5 days a week. I don't want her to, I don't need to read about her. You know, that's the problem. You've got this MBA mindset. Let's run these soaps like a real estate company. You've got people who aren't creative running these shows, and they're coming up with these marketing gimmicks instead of writing good story. And that's not going to save this genre. Passions had a bestseller, and I actually think that book did really well. That Hidden Passions. Where is Passions today? You know, they're trying to sell it to, you know, the Bait and Tackle Shop network at this point to keep it on the air. It's, you know, gimmicks and crap don't. I mean, what are they going to do? Make Fusion paper dolls? I mean, no one wants that.
Now, I would not put anything past Fusion, to be quite honest.
I mean, Bold and the Beautiful could have come up. I mean, yeah, they could have done, you know, a fashion line or whatever that they could sell in Kmart, like Jacqueline Smith, and have, you know, Catherine Kelly Lang be the spokesmodel. But that's not what we as soap fans should have to worry about. That's the network heads. We want good soap. We want good writing. Let everybody else figure out how to monetize it.
Well, as we're wrapping things up here, what are your guys's? Did you guys have any other final thoughts as to how Bold and the Beautiful could be improved? Mike, then Jamie?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the show rides like a roller coaster. It can be so good, and then it just tanks. And I really think that its strength is within what's already there. You've got a 30-minute show. You've got a base of characters. Instead of having two families that sleep with each other all the time and trade off partners, if you start focusing on character, motivation, business, I think things would just start to come together. And that's what's always made it work. I mean, you took a dull story like Taylor versus Brooke and you re-energized it, and you've got a hell of a thing going on a couple of months ago that's completely fallen apart. It's like all these threads are left hanging and nobody's picking them up and tying them all together. So it's there, but it's just not coming together right now.
Jamie, what do you think?
You got to reestablish your archetypes and your core. I mean, if you ask the One Life to Live fans, I know especially this one who's only been watching a couple of years, what all went down between Vicky and Dorian, except for Tina, and people who've been watching 30, 40 years, they don't know. But we just know that they hate each other and that's good story. Get the people who are rivals back rivals. Stop them from crying and being depressed. You know, put the characters who should be on the back burner on the back burner, or show some of them the door, because this is a 30-minute soap and we don't have a lot of room for superfluous characters. And just get back to the core of what makes these characters tick, what makes this show tick, what made it. I always say with any soap, go back to when it was at its zenith and go from there. Figure out what it was doing then, and try to put a new, fresh, modern spin on it. And for me, Bold and the Beautiful was popping when I first started watching it in the early 90s, you know. But and I have to say, I'm sounding all excitable and, you know, kind of irate, but B&B is one of the better soaps on today. So, my God, when we get to some of the other ones, I don't know, I'll probably have to take a sleeping pill or something to
drink a shot, and then
myself.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Don't, well, what do you think, Luke?
When we discuss God and Light, I might need to be tranquilized.
What's your thoughts, Luke?
I was going to read some of the stuff that people comment on the blog real quick. We have F. Smith. I'm just sort of bullet pointing some of these things. Redos or bring back. Reunite Bridge and Taylor. Or Ridge and Taylor. Bring back Deacon Sharp, even as a recast, and that reignites a lot of Bold and the Beautiful's recent core history. Imagine Deacon and a newly bitchy Felicia together, in business and in the bedroom. And I think that's sort of one of the things that Jamie pulled on. Booze26 writes, Brooke and Ridge need to get married, but during the bedroom and during the boardroom troubles, that marriage gets in trouble. Thorne stands up to Brooke, and the relationship takes on a new level. Hope is the key in this relationship and puts Ridge and Thorne under a lot of pressure. Ozzy Bryan writes, Logan versus Forrester in the glitzy glamour boardroom battle. The rivalry would be fierce. Add a few spicy glamour shoots, Stephanie versus Brooke, and it'll be game on, classic Bold and the Beautiful. Soap Junkie writes, give us more stuff about Taylor and Rick. This couple is just not used, and I can't understand why. With Brooke as Rick's mother, there should be more than enough to tell. And if Ashley is still on the show, too, maybe she could be used there. Simon Stewart writes, break up Brooke and Ridge permanently, because that relationship is done and over with, and leaving many to asking who cares if they get married. And then finally, Cashin writes, give a Logan woman a brain. There are too many stupid choices by these women, with Bridget being the dumbest. Bridget really shined when she told off her mother about Nick for one brief moment. We need more of that than her being stupid.
Isn't it sad that poor Bridget, it's like, you know, like when your mom is mad at you, she says you're your dad's son. And then when your dad is mad at you, he says you're your mom's son. Poor Bridget's a Forrester and a Logan, and nobody wants her. You know, she and Rick should be the glue that keeps the two family together, but they're the missing links. And I haven't talked much about Rick. I love, love, love Cal Louder, but he needs to be back on Days. He is not he's not Rick Forrester. There's no chemistry between him and Taylor.
I would argue that Rick and Taylor shouldn't be hooked up in the first place.
No.
But Mike, you asked earlier what I thought. I really think that boardroom is where it comes down to in many respects. The reason why I've always tuned in and some of the most memorable moments I'm reminded of in my short time as a Bold and the Beautiful viewer have been the boardroom battles. Who controls Forrester has been something, at least in the time that I've been watching, that has been so integral to my enjoyment of it that without it, it just isn't the same. Obviously, the question of Susan Flannery, will she stay or how long is she staying and what is going to happen without her is something that is looming in the future. And I think that, like many have suggested, Felicia would be the obvious heir apparent to start filling those shoes and taking on that role is great. As you guys pointed out, diversity is something that can be easily implemented. It's just a matter of finding the right people. I think that there's something to be said. They may have tried it once before and it fell flat by introducing a little bit of diversity by having Thomas date a Hispanic character. That storyline didn't quite work out as well, but there's something
to be said. That wasn't Thomas, that was Thorne.
No, I'm thinking of Thomas because her father was knocked off of the
Yeah, he did have the little Spanish girl too.
Yes, he did. I'm not entirely stupid, Jamie.
I didn't say you were stupid, but you mix up names like a woman who had to have her Ginkgo biloba, so.
I think that there would be – I think that if they didn't introduce them necessarily within fashion specifically, it would be fairly easy to introduce minority female characters that could start being romantic interest for the various men on the show and get us off of this Logan focus. I think that when it comes down to it, the Logans are great. They have their place in the show. I don't think the show could survive without them. But they're multiplying like cockroaches, and there's just way too many of them.
Well, they've always been there, but the only three we care about are Brooke, Bridget, and Rick.
Exactly.
Get rid of the rest of them, especially if it means my Heather Tom gets to go back to Young and the Restless, where she belongs.
When it comes down to it, I think you guys had a brilliant idea of just making Bridget whacked out crazy. It would be so awesome and probably win her an Emmy if they were to write such a storyline for her. I mean, if she just went apeshit, it would be absolutely awesome. I do disagree a little bit on the stunt casting, as it may have been indicated earlier. I do think that there is a way in a world where you have Project Runways, America's Next Top Model, and other high fashion events that have become more and more public and mainstream, that if you have the writing in place already, and that is would probably be the key, if you have the writing in place so you have great writing, if you take and were to be able to seamlessly introduce those characters or those individuals and make them a special treat, get a little bit more of a headline so that you can have a headline when people are wanting to say, why should I tune in? You might get a few defunct viewers here and there. No, I'm not saying that these should be the foundation on which the show is built. But if the writing is good enough, I say that there could be a way to do it and get a good headline or two out of it. I really think that in many respects, and I know this is going to sound a little bit like I'm brown nosing or something, but I really think that if they're going to do it, Leslie Kay is the way to do it for the future, because that character Felicia, and Leslie Kay is one of daytime's most underrated actresses.
She deserves major kudos, because Felicia was an already established character with a popular actress, Colleen Dion, who had played it for years on and off, and Leslie Kay came in and made that role hers seamlessly.
Well, and finally, I guess
she's capable of being a vixen. I mean, we've seen her do it.
Molly,
she's totally capable of doing it.
If they would just write her like they wrote her as Molly on As the World Turns, hell, boy, fun. Finally, I know this is going to sound stupid, but for a soap specifically, this show's got to stop thinking with its underpants, both for both the women and the men.
Mm-hmm.
There's more bed hopping going on this show and more relationship dynamics that it gets to the point where you just get a headache and need to take a migraine medication to watch.
A lot of that is Bold and the Beautiful. We talk so much about money. One of the reasons Bold and the Beautiful has gone to that campier, light, bed hopping, romping view of rich, trashy Americans is because it's popular overseas. You know, these countries where we as American fans probably do want the more integrated stories with business and drama and intrigue, but Bold and Beautiful is popular, wildly popular in countries that do the telenovela. Do you watch? Have you even seen one of those telenovelas even with your mute button on?
Actually, I'm thinking about trying to learn Spanish that way.
They are cheesy, campy, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, definitely, because B&B definitely still has its strong dramatic points, but it's palatable for an international audience, and that might be why they're doing it that way. I'm not giving it a defense, because it's got to be a way to make it palatable for, because it's always been popular. It was popular way back when it was, you know, in much better, you know, shape. And I'll have to say, I also want to give all the shows while we're doing this credit, because they're all still trying to bounce back from a gnarly, gnarly writer strike. So, you know, I'm just hoping that 6 months from now, it'll be back to the B&B that we all know and love.
And I guess finally, Mike pointed out something earlier in terms of Bold and the Beautiful, the highs and lows of Bold and the Beautiful, I swear it's like 6 months on, 6 months off. Mm-hmm. This show can be so brilliant, and you can have stuff like Betty White visiting and that story when she arrived, and everything with Stephanie surrounding that was amazing. And you had the boardroom battle, and it was just amazing stuff. The drama and the anticipation was so – I was watching that live. I was so in wanting to see it. And then the next 6 months are just unbelievably boring and have absolutely no interest. And I feel like I'm on a continual roller coaster with this show. And what concerns me is that it's possible that instead of focusing on the story, as Jamie's pointed out, that there will be other things that might get in the way, whether it be filming styles or a new format, because there's been the talk of the fact that Bold and the Beautiful might be getting an overhaul. If it comes down to an overhaul, I would rather just have the writing in terms of great storylines day in, day out, than something that makes a difference with camera styles.
Oh, yeah. Bold and the Beautiful is the most visually appealing, you know, tied with, I'd say, Days of Our Lives. I mean, those shows are so lush and beautiful. The sets are great. You know, the lighting is awesome. I don't think they – please, 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 Bradley Bell, don't do that Guiding Light crap. Don't do those handheld cameras. I'm going to – man, I tell you what. Somebody needs to take a hammer and beat every one of those handheld cameras that P&G owns. I don't want to see that jerky, herky stuff. That's just a big old ball of mess. Doesn't nobody want to see that.
Okay, the only – and this is getting into semantics, and I don't mean to get into arguing over cameras, but I still maintain that that it's not necessarily the cameras so much as how you use them. Because
soaps ought to look like soaps. They ought to be lush and filmed in somebody's living room.
I agree. But I do think that there is an element of lushness that those cameras provide that you don't necessarily get with the normal cameras. But if you look at its sister soap, As the World Turns, to me, the way they've been able to blend the outside shaky camera filming style with the interior one, and then keep the same soundtrack and score, keep everything else the same, it's pretty much went off flawlessly.
It hasn't. For you, maybe. I hate it. That scene where they had Lisa talking to Brad that day and they were using that crazy camera, it just threw everything off. And that was a good storyline. And when Carly was there trying to find that puppet, crazy puppet man, or that woman, when they went on location and they were using that ugly camera stuff, I don't like it. That's not soap.
See, I thought that scene with Carly and the thing we are getting so way off basis was great. But on that note, this has been a extended edition of How to Improve the Bold and the Beautiful. I guess this is going to turn it into its own episode, considering it's an hour and 15 minutes approximately. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope that maybe in our discussion of what ways we think that Bold and the Beautiful can be improve, something good has come of it. We by no stretch of the imagination claim to have the cure-all for soaps, though Jamie may say that it all comes down to writing. He may be right. We would encourage you to leave your comments by calling 917-677-9757 or send us an email by emailing us at podcast@daytimeconfidential.com. Check us out on MySpace or Facebook by visiting the links on the main menu at daytimeconfidential.com or visit the forums at forums.tvfanonline.com. Until next time, in our next edition of How to Improve Your Favorite Soaps, so long.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Hello, everybody at Daytime Confidential. This is the best. Bold and the Beautiful. Ways to improve that. Well, let's see. First and foremost, get Nick away from those damn Logans. Soon he's going to be knocking off Beth. And it just doesn't make any sense. And I want Bridget can be the next Sheila Carter. I want her to, like, go postal and, like, seriously kill everyone in L.A., starting with her mother. I know Jamie loves Brooke, but Brooke irked the living hell out of me. I was watching today, and the way she was looking at Taylor and the way she was treating Taylor at Bridget and Nick's wedding really made me sick. I wanted Taylor to, like, just drink a whole bottle of gin and then bludgeon that little whore to death with it. She was truly the slut from the valley, but she loved to look down on other people. And I need Susan Flannery to have more screen time. I know she wants to slowly fade into the background because she wants to retire, but I need her... We need as much of her as we can for as long as we can. Work her like a dog until she's ready to retire. I really need that. And break up Donna and Eric. He doesn't have to get back together with Stephanie because we all know she screwed that up. Get him with Jackie. Get him back together with Beth. Hell, get him with Pam for all I care. And give Tom a story. He can turn... Make him gay. I don't care anything. Hell, make him gay and put him with Nick for all I give a damn. Just use the characters that they don't use. Windsor Harmon and Leslie Kay are just too good to be window dressing, acting like 40-ish, over-the-hill spoiled brats. I think my 3 minutes is up, so I'm just going to leave you guys with that, and hopefully this will end up on the podcast. So Luke, Tina, Jay, all of you, I love you to death. Thank you.
Hi, this is Michelle. I was calling about improvements that can be made to The Bold and the Beautiful. I watch the show, and I just get so tired of the quick pace that it goes. They set up the whole Nick, Taylor, Brooke thing, and then all of a sudden it's Katie, Nick, and Bridget. And it's just one episode, and people just completely change their feelings about one another. Nobody cares about a big storyline that's gone on for the last 2 or 3 months. It's just move on to the next thing, and that would be it would be a major improvement if they would just pace their show a little better. I know it's only 30 minutes, but it's still really unrealistic. I know it's in L.A., but, I mean, nobody changes their feelings that fast, so that would definitely be my suggestion. Thanks. Love your podcast. Bye.
My wife and I have been watching The Bold and the Beautiful for a number of years, but we're having a hard time watching it lately. So we've come up with the 10 top ways to improve the show. Reunite Brooke and Nick. Number 2, break up Brooke and Ridge permanently. Number 3, break up Taylor and Rick and create a Taylor-Ridge-Ashley triangle and a Phoebe-Rick-Steffi-Marcus quadrangle. Taylor and Rick are a ridiculous, boring pair. Break them up and create new romances for them. 4, break up Bridget and Nick and give Bridget a brain. Number 5, make Y&R's Neil Winters Marcus's biological dad. What an ideal situation for a crossover between Y&R and B&B. Since Neil went to Stanford in California, he could have easily met Donna in California and had a brief affair, thus producing Marcus. Number 6, end the medical storylines. Since when has B&B turned into General Hospital? Number 7, bring back Deacon Sharp and Shane McGrath. I give B&B kudos for hiring Brandon Beamer as their newest bad boy, but it's a huge mistake to lose two of their best stars. Number 8, keep the characters' belief and characteristics consistent. The characters have changed so much in 2008, they're unrecognizable. Number 9, return the focus to the main characters. It's ridiculous to watch Brooke and Stephanie become supporting characters while Katie, Beth, Marcus, and Donna are hogging up most of the screen time. And finally, number 10, Forrester versus Maroney Fashion Wars. B&B used to be all about the fashion wars. It's time to revive the competition. Forresters versus Maroneys. Keep in mind that Forrester creations shouldn't always come out on top as to fuel the competition and to keep viewers guessing. That's our thoughts for the top 10 ways to improve the show. If you want my wife and I to continue taping the show and watching it each evening like we've done for a number of years, you better make these changes. Otherwise, you're going to lose us. Thanks.